It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, hey, everyone. It's a great time to chat roses, and we're glad you joined us for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, the weather in Alabama is starting to clear, and we're going to kick that polar vortex goodbye. With spring coming in tomorrow, you know, I think things are starting to look up for gardeners.
Oh, that's the truth. In just a couple of hours, it will officially be spring. You know, there were times when I didn't think I would make it through my spring countdown this year, but we're finally here, and I can't wait to see things begin to grow again. Chris, I know you've already started posting pictures of spring blooms there in Alabama. What's blooming this week?
Well, we've got daffodils in bloom, and the forsythia is in full bloom. I was driving down the parkway on my way home from work today, and it's really a traffic stopper. Lots of forsythia planted in mass, and it's just gorgeous. That means it's time to sharpen your rose pruners.
Yes, it is. I have forsythia blooming, but I bought it at Trader Joe's. Ours is just getting close, but not quite there. It is an exciting time. I've seen a few iris and daffodils poking their leaves up, but we're a long way from bloom. In fact, I think I heard Mr. G say that there was a slim chance of snow tonight, so...
Ooh,
so we're not completely done with the winter weather. But
yeah.
Spring is such an exciting time, and we have a great show tonight to usher in spring. One of America's best-known rosarians is with us. Paul Zimmerman has been growing roses for years. Once he owned a nursery specializing in roses. He's a published author with the release of his popular book, Everyday Roses. And if that isn't enough, he is also the curator of the Biltmore Rose Trials. And Paul's with us in the virtual studio. And after a quick break, we'll get started. And remember, if you have questions for Paul, just give us a call at 347-677-1870. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat coming your way.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mites, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
I chat, you chat, we all chat about Rose Chat. It's the place to talk roses online. Follow the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Find us on Facebook or listen to the Rose Chat podcast on Blog Talk Radio. You can even listen on the go via iTunes and Stitcher app. Honey, you know I love me some Rose Chat. So come on, jump in and explore the wild and wonderful world of roses.
Hey, we're back, and our guest tonight is Paul Zimmerman. Welcome to Rose Chat, Paul.
Great to see you guys. How you doing?
Hey, we're doing great. Glad you could join us tonight. So much going on in the rose world lately, huh?
It has been. I mean, it's you know, everything sort of like hit a bit of a lull, I guess, during the recession and in the late 90s, but it's been it's just been rocking lately.
Oh, absolutely. And I hear that you just got off of a cruise. The American Rose Society had a cruise that you were a part of.
Yeah, they did. The American Rose Society started it last year. This is the second year. They do an annual cruise in the Caribbean, and it was in February, and it was a week-long cruise on Norwegian Cruise Line, and it was seminars and some great talks, And as much as anything, you know, it was just great fellowship. I mean, it's so cool to hang out with people who still enjoy the same passion that you do. And we just had a great time, and I would advise anyone to take advantage and do it next year.
Oh, wow. Absolutely. I'm sorry I missed it. I was taking care of things on my day job, so maybe someday I'll get to
Well, you know, Chris, I hated to go instead of you, but, you know, someone's got to take a bullet for the team, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's worse things in the middle of February and with the polar vortex we've had going on than, you know, spending 7 days on a ship in the Caribbean and enjoying the warm sun and rose talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to congratulate you on the success of your book, Everyday Roses. It seems like everywhere I go, every home center bookstore around town, I see your book. It's incredible.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's exciting. I mean, you know, you write something like that in a bit of a bubble in the sense that, you know, you hope that people want to hear what you're writing about and are interested in what you're writing about or talking about, whatever the case is. And, you know, I had a tremendous team at Taunton Press in terms of my editors and stuff like that. But then you chuck it out there and point, you just sort of say, well, you know, let's see what happens. But, I mean, the response we've got has been very good. You know, Lowe's Home Improvement, as you know, picked it up, and I was actually in our Lowe's recently nearby us in Spartanburg, South Carolina, about 6 weeks ago, and they restocked their shelves, and I'm thinking, yes, this is great news. Daddy's got a new royalty check coming.
Well,
it's at the end of the day, I'm joking, but it's incredibly flattering. I mean, I've wanted to write a book for a lot of years, and to be able to do it and get the support that I've gotten and the reviews, I mean, it's a tremendous honor, and I feel very flattered to be able to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it has struck a chord with everyday gardeners that, you know, you bring roses into the landscape and truly how easy it is to incorporate them into your garden.
Yeah, that was the idea for the book. I mean, as I said all along, you know, I wrote the book for gardeners. I didn't write it for rose folks. I mean, you know, you guys are rose folks. I'm a rose person. We're going to grow roses regardless of what the situation is, what the economy is, what's going on around us, drought, whatever the case may be. But general gardeners, I think, over the years have gotten scared of roses. You know, they were told they were too difficult, or maybe they got the wrong rose and it was too difficult, or they read about all the complex feeding and care programs, which if you exhibit roses, those care programs are needed. But if you're just a general gardener who wants a beautiful flowering shrub in their garden, you know, to me, the message that I always try to get across is if you're a gardener and you look at roses and there's a group of flowering shrubs that bloom from spring to fall, come in every color of the rainbow except blue, and they grow from ground cover to something that will ramble up your trees, it's the most diverse group of flowering shrubs we have for the garden palette.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, Paul, we've got questions already queued up tonight, and we've got a gentleman in our chat room who wants to know about using roses as aromatherapy. Have you done much work with that?
You know, I mean, I've not done formal work in the sense that I suspect what he's talking about, but, I mean, think about, you know, roses for so many years. I mean, you know, the apothecary rose, Rosa Galica officinalis, was named that, the apothecary rose, for medicinal purposes. You know, Rosa Damascena, which is the rose that was cultivar for the Rosa Attar, which is a perfume, has been around for literally thousands of years. So rose scents and rose aromas have always been around us. And I think that most people, if you ask them the name of scent that reminded them of love or something along that, the rose scent would be up there. So I would say absolutely. I mean, you know, there's a wide tradition of roses being used in these kind of purposes.
I totally agree with that. Our next question comes from Kathy, and she says, with so many roses to choose from this year from the catalogs, what are some of your recommendations on new roses to buy this year?
Well, that's always a hard question. Yeah, you're laughing.
Yeah, we'll do the hard questions first, right? Yeah.
What's the last one I walked by and caught my eye?
Right.
There are a lot of great roses, and I'm going to caveat by saying a couple of things up front with Kathy. First of all, Kathy, always make sure that you're picking the right rose for your area. The United States is a very large country. We have 50 states. We have you know, a myriad of climate zones. So a rose that does well for me might not do well for you, and vice versa. So always, you know, keep that in mind. Check your local rose society, local botanic gardens, public, you know, garden forums on the internet, stuff like that. That being said, some ones that seem to be doing well are some ones that I know you guys have talked about on the show. Beverly, which is the Cortez rose that did well to build more trials. I know, Chris, you and Teresa both grow this rose. I'm very impressed with that. You know, there's a rose called from Conard Pyle, Star Rose, called Mother of Pearl, that I actually planted at our church in a pretty unfavorable condition right off our parking lot. It thrived. It was blooming through last November through a freeze. I was very impressed by that one, extremely well. And one of the roses that I still adore and I keep talking about is a rose that was part of the former Biltmore collection, but you still get it from Chambly Roses, from Flamenco Rosita. You know, I've had plants almost for 10 years, and I have never seen black spot on this stuff. So I think there's a lot of great...
outstanding in my garden.
Is it? Yeah, and that's what I keep hearing from people, is that it does extremely well. So those, I look at the Drift series, the Oh So Easy series, and what I always tell people, too, when it comes to selecting roses, think of roses a bit like you think of authors and musicians. You know, I'm a big Bruce Springsteen fan, for example. So when Bruce puts a new album out, I'm going to buy it. I don't have to hear it. I don't need to read a review. I'm just going to go out and buy it. Well, roses are bred by breeders, you know, whether it be Cortez, whether it be Christian Bedard from Weeks, whether it be, you know, Chris Warner, who's released stuff with the Oh So Happy series, Mike Athey, who cleaned up at the Biltmore series, International Rose Trials last year. And if you look at the codes that are on the name, you'll see, like, for example, Beverly is B-E-V-E-R-L-O-Y. Then you'll see a code underneath that starts with K-O-R. That's the Cortez breeding code. And once you start to learn breeders that do well in your area, pursue them like with Duke musicians and or authors, and look for the breeders that do well in your area.
Well, I'll tell you, that's some great advice. You know, our next question, we've got three or four queued up, so I'm going to move through them. So I know we'll be short of time if we don't. What is the best method for training a climber onto a trellis?
The best method for training a climber onto a trellis, what I always advise folks, is start with, obviously, when the rose is young and the canes are pliable. The thing to remember with the climbing rose is that if you train it straight up, it will only bloom at the top. I always call it that bloomerama zone, which is between horizontal and 45 degrees. And what you want to do.
I love
do
that. What'd you say? Bloomerama.
Bloomerama zone. Bloomerama zone.
Yeah. That's a new rose term. We're going to coin that.
It's on one of my YouTube videos. It's called Training a Rose, a Climbing Rose on a Trellis. The thing to do when you train it is weave it back and forth. So try to picture that 5-degree angle. And take a cane and go out from the center to the edge of the trellis and then gently turn the curve and come back at 45 degrees and keep going up and down the trellis that way. You will get to the top of the trellis, but that's what gives you that wall of flowers as opposed to only flowers at the top.
Wow. And, you know, I think that's what people want is a wall of flowers. And they think that if they just buy the rose and let it just run up to the center, then that's what they'll get. But there's really a technique to it.
Yeah, there really is, and it's understanding that when you get them in that, what I call that bloomerama zone, TM, by the way, what you do is the little, what they're called side shoots or laterals, but basically it's at the base of every single leaf is a little thing called a bud eye, and that's where the growth comes from. And climbing roses, the key to this is to understand there's two kinds of canes. There's what's called the main cane, which is the cane that forms the structure. That's the one that grows from the ground that basically you train up the trellis or along the fence, whatever you want to do with. Those really don't produce the flowers. It's those side shoots or laterals that come off those main canes that produce the flowers. And it's only when those main canes are trained between being horizontal and 45 degrees, that's when they produce the laterals, that's when you get the flowers.
That's interesting. And you know, that's what we want. I've got a couple climbers here that I have tried using the method that you suggested, and we get five times as many blooms doing that as we do.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, I've got an arbor on our farm here, for example, which is about 8 or 9 feet high, and I've actually got 6 roses trained on it this day. Two of the roses are taller, Rev Door and it's an happy rose called Apicopaha, which hasn't been released yet. And I train those straight up to go across the top. There's my color on the top. But on the side, I pick shorter rope climbing roses. Those are the ones I train back and forth at a 45-degree angle. They give me the blooms on the side of the arbor. So I've got, you know, and then I've got shorter roses which fill in the base. So I've basically got six roses to cover this arbor. But each one grows to a very specific area and has been trained in a specific area in order to do that. And while this sounds complicated, it really isn't if you just understand why the how the climbers grow and how they produce the flowers. Once you grasp that concept, then it becomes incredibly simple to get them to do what you want them to do.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds great. We've got a caller on the line who has a question. You bring her on. Good evening. You're on the Rose Chat. How are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty good.
Great. Do you have a question for our guest, Paul Zimmerman?
Yeah, I wanted to know his take on aromatherapy with roses and like just aroma of plants in general.
Paul, did you hear our question for our guest about aromatherapy and fragrance and for roses?
I didn't fully understand it. So they're talking about the properties of aromatherapy?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Again, it's not a field I know. I'm an expert in, quite honestly. I mean, you know, I know roses extremely well. You know, in terms of how that would apply to aromatherapy, I will be honest with you. I don't feel qualified to answer that question other than I know plants smell really good and they make me feel well.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's really fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, my take on it is I always seen roses as a unconditional energy of just love. And, you know, I grow roses myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think they're great, you know. So.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think roses, you know, I mean, I think we often associate, I think the first thing that people think of when they think of roses is smell and scent. You know, one of the disappointments I hear from folks is that a lot of roses recently or over the last whatever haven't had a lot of fragrance in them. And I think always when people look at roses, the first thing they do is actually smell them. You know, I know for me personally, you know, whether it relates to aromatherapy or not, I can't honestly tell you, but that smells bring back memories and feelings and emotions, I think, in all of us more than almost anything else does. And the fragrance of roses, to me personally at least, is just an amazing thing. I mean, I can be stressed out, you know, working or doing whatever I'm doing. At the end of the day, you know, it's a nice spring day, and Chris and Teresa, I know, can relate to this, when the garden's in bloom, I'll walk out there and I'll smell the roses, and either by the overwhelming scent of all of them or from my nose an individual one. And it's just the calming effect is absolutely astonishing. And even 3 days ago, we have, you know, I've planted over 2,000 or 3,000 daffodils on our farm. And I was walking from here to the barn where my wife keeps her horses. And I was walking through the areas where most of the daffodils are. And I planted a thick, fragrant variety. And it was one of those moments when the breeze and everything and the humidity was working together extremely well. And this phenomenal scent of these daffodils came. And the calming effect is amazing. So I think that's what you're relating to, and I totally agree with that.
Yeah, that was what I was relating to. And you guys are lucky. You get to live on a farm, so that can be really therapeutic as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, just being down on the farm is therapeutic. It is for me, anyway.
Yeah, get your hands in the dirt. You know, good fresh compost. Nothing. You know, I tell you, you know, one of the greatest smells for me, great, well-composted horse
yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your call tonight. Please stay on the line, and our producer will get your information, and we'd love to send you a Rose Chat coffee mug.
Definitely.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Well, Paul, you know, I just to go back to what our caller was saying, I think that, that you know, people grow roses for different reasons. You know, in the rose community, we have, you know, so many folks that exhibit, and that's their focus. But, you know, for millions of people, they grow roses for, you know, for reasons of the heart. And, you know, that in itself is therapeutic. And you know, I just think that that is so much a much larger part of roses than what we realize sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Chris. Yeah, I mean, I think people do. I mean, you know, there are folks who exhibit, and it's a phenomenal hobby. And I've said over and over again, you know, it should be respected. It's incredibly talented, hard work to exhibit roses. But I think most folks, it's just the passion of it. I mean, you know, even folks who aren't, you know, I have people who come to our garden and our farm here and stuff like that, and they're not rosarians. They like flowers, they like plants, but they see the roses, and it just seems to sing to them in a completely different voice than the other plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to our next question. We've got a question from someone who is in zone 8A, and that's my zone, and says that they'll be planting out some new beds this spring of roses in strips along the roadside. They want to know what roses you'd recommend for this area that has a lot of high heat.
Ooh. You know, Chris, you're probably better qualified to answer that than me, and this goes back to the local aspect of it. I think the first thing you want to think about is, you know, you're planting along the roadside, so obviously you've got to deal with the conditions that come with that. You also want to think about height. I always tell people with roses, don't buy them based on the flower. You know, you need to buy them in this situation based on what the growing conditions are and what size you want them to be. I mean, do you want 5 foot, 6 foot along the roadside? Maybe not good. You might block views. If you want something lower, you know, the Drift series is a phenomenal series of roses. But, you know, the popcorn drift, red drifts, you know, coral drifts and all those. The flower carpet series, which originally came out maybe 15, 20 years ago from Teslar, they've come out with a new generation, which is quite good. I've been testing them in my garden. So I would think go for something a little lower. Look at that Drift series, that flower carpet series. Those are the ones I think would do extremely well in those conditions, and also stay a little bit lower because, you know, you got to deal with sight lines if you're going along roads.
Oh, absolutely. And I guess, you know, if it's along the roadside, you might have some safety concerns as well as, you know, people backing in and out of spaces and making turns and that sort of thing. They want to be able to see over and around them too.
Exactly, yeah. You don't want to be blocking viewpoints, and that's why I would say go with the lower things. That's why, again, with that Drift series, that you know, the flower carpet series would do extremely well. Those would do very, very well for them in that area. And, you know, I mean, they tend to do extremely well everywhere. I know Chris, you're going some of the Drift series, and they'll please with them as well.
Oh, yeah. We've got several shrubs of red drift, and I've been instructed to add some more this year. So
you've been instructed?
Definitely be doing that. Yes. Mrs. Redneck Rosarian has instructed me that we must have more, that she is very pleased with.
I'm sure somebody had to twist your arm, Chris.
Yeah, they did.
Mrs. Redneck Rosarian loves those full blooms like floribundas and drift roses, and she and I are alike on that. I've got 10 of drift roses I'm getting ready to put in a line, and I cannot wait to see what they do.
Yeah, they're great roses. I've got 10 of the red drift at our church around our sign in front. They're just a great rose. It's a great performance area.
They sure are. Paul, if we could turn our conversation to a bit to trends in roses. You know, without question, knockout has revolutionized the world. And now it's been around 10 years. So what do you see as the next big thing in roses?
Well, I don't think it's so much the next big thing in terms of individual rose. I mean, I think knockout was, if you look over rose history, you know, knockout's timing was about right. It's used about every 50, 60 years, something shakes up the rose world. You know, you go back to knockout, which is 2000, which is Bill Radler. You know, go back 50 years, maybe 55 years, you got the Peace Rose from Beyond. Also, the Star Rose, which is 100 Mile, oddly enough. You know, then go back another 50 years and go back to Celador, you know, hybridized by Joseph Pernet Duchesne, which introduced that orange kind of color. So those seminal events, you know, tend to repeat themselves. So I don't think we'll see another knockout, probably not for another 50, 60 years. I think what we will see in the rose world, and what we are seeing, as a matter of fact, is because of knockout, and I always tell people with knockout, is that knockout changed the conversation in the United States in terms of roses. Whether you're a fan of knockout or not a fan of knockout is irrelevant to the question at this point. Is the fact that it taught gardeners and understand there's about 80 million gardeners, households that garden on average in the United States, that they can grow a rose in their garden with no more care than any other flower and shrub. And now you're seeing the breeders who will be getting to follow that up. You have two classes of that. You have the European breeders like Cordes, who were really way ahead of the curve. Wilhelm Cordes stopped spraying their test field probably close to 30 years ago now, if my memory serves. You have breeders like Delbart in France, Mike Gaffney from New Zealand, people like that who've always done that. But then you've got, breeders in this country, Jim Sproul, who did the Iconic series, Christian Bedard from Weeks, Bill Radler, of course, who did the Knockout series, Robert Ripiteau was someone to keep an eye out for. And they're doing roses that are as every bit easy to grow as any other shrub in your garden. But now you're getting different flower forms in the roses. You're getting fragrance in these easy to care, easy to grow roses, and you're getting the diversity of the rose world in an easy to care plant. And I think that's where we're going. So I wouldn't put it on one particular family. I think you're going to see a trend towards roses that are easy to grow, but also bring back the diversity in the rose world, which, as I've said earlier, is the most diverse gardening plant we have, in my opinion.
That's really good news for rose lovers to have the diversity. So I think roses have a rosy future. We have lots of good things coming down the pike. You mentioned the Delbart roses. Could you explain to our listeners what you mean by the Delbart series?
Yeah, the Delbart series, they're a French breeding firm. The nursery is still owned by Henri and Honoré Delbart, who is Henri's third generation. Arnaud is third generation. Henri is second. It was started by Georges Delbard from a flower cart in Paris back in the 1930s. I first saw these roses, I was in Europe at the Finessi Garden in Italy, which is probably one of the most astonishing rose gardens in the world in terms of what this gentleman who's since deceased, sadly, has done. And I was walking through the garden, through the hybrid musk walk in the garden, and I turned the corner, and I was with a dear friend of mine, Mary Williams, and there were these roses all kind of blooming on the side, and there were these different colors and health and everything like that. I knew Finessi did not use chemical sprays, and I just said, what the heck are those? She said, they're Delbart roses, D-E-L-B-A-R-D, and I said, I've never heard of Delbart. Long story short, I got introduced to Henri and Arnaud, and I started bringing the roses to the United States. You're starting to see them a little bit more in this country now. And what they have seemed to be able to do is put together a combination of incredible health and vigor with fragrance and beauty. How they did this, I don't know. I mean, obviously, they're breeding and incredible talent and skill. And that's what I love about their roses. I mean, I probably have about 50 different varieties in my garden here. In the upstate of South Carolina, the foothills of Blue Ridge Mountains, I don't spray, as you all know. I'm an organic rose grower, and they are phenomenally healthy, and they're fragrant, and they're beautiful, and they're to me kind of everything what I want a rose to be. And so it's exciting that you're going to start seeing them in the United States a whole lot more in the next couple of years.
Is there any place that we can get them now, or is this something that we'll have to wait on?
You can get them to in some boutique nurseries. Roses Unlimited in Lawrence, South Carolina, which is, to me, one of the great secrets of the rose world in terms of a phenomenal nursery, has a nice selection of them. Rogue Valley Roses has some as well. And you'll start to see them in other places. Palatine Roses, which sells beautiful bare roots out of Canada. We just sent a ton of budwood up there. They're going to be introducing a whole lot more of them as well. And then, fingers crossed, you might see them in a whole lot more mass production in the next 2 to 3 years. But they are, and particularly if they're fans of striped roses, their Painter series is absolutely astonishing. They're just breathtakingly beautiful.
Okay, you've convinced us. I'm going to have some.
All right. This is just me as a rose. I mean, this is what I love about what I do. I mean, I get to go to a place like Italy and fall in love with roses and bring them to America. I mean, can I be more blessed?
Well, you've never let us down. Your advice has always been stellar. So we're going to take
Thank you.
Advice and run with it. Hey, in your book, Everyday Roses, you focus on the entire garden space and not just a formal rose garden setting. So we'd love to hear your favorite companion plants for roses.
Well, I mean, companion plants for roses, I mean, first of all, I think anything goes well with roses. I always look for the color blue because, you know, blue is not a color that's naturally found in roses. The blue gene in plants is the delphinium gene, and it's not, the roses don't carry it naturally. So that's always a nice kind of color. Then I look for, you know, contrasting shapes. I mean, you know, roses tend to be rounded, so, you know, spiky shapes, foxgloves, you know, things like penstemon, delphinium, those are great contrasts. But then you can also get into, if you look at a holistic approach to your garden, and that's what I do talk about in my book, I talk about a large section about creating a host environment for beneficial insects. And when I give talks, I always ask people, how many people have released ladybugs in their garden? And I imagine most of your listeners have now raised their hands. Then the second question is, how many people have seen the ladybug disappear the next day, of which probably the same number of amount have also raised their hands? And the key I always tell people this, and I will give credit to Beer Creek Nursery and in Holland, who taught me this, is that it's not the adult ladybugs or the adult carver flies, the adult praying mantis, or the adult, you know, that eat necessarily the aphids or the thrips or the things that you want to deal with. It's their babies that do. So what you have to do in your garden with your companion planting is thinking about creating plants that bring in the adults that you want to lay the eggs that will feed on the aphids and the pests that you basically deal with. So like early blooming nectar plants, herbs, you know, the Umbrophilia family, things along those lines do extremely well in your garden. And what happens is the adults then come in when those blooming nectars are blooming before the roses bloom. That's where they live. They're happy there. Then they go to lay their eggs with their babies. They do that at the same time they know food will be available. So if the baby, for example, hoverfly, eats aphids, which in my part of the world, that's exactly what they feed on. So they will then lay their eggs the exact same time the aphids appear, A. B, they will lay them where they know the aphids are going to be, which are in my roses, which is a consequence why I have very few aphids. And as was explained to me by Beer Creek, that's also why I don't have thrips. I live in thrip country, and in 20 years, I've never had a thrip issue. It's because those hoverflies that have laid their first generation of eggs and eaten the aphids, they become adults. And later on in the summer, when those adults are looking to reproduce, they then lay their eggs the same time that the food will be available, which is in the form of thrips. So with that, so when you do companion planting, you know, first of all, figure out, you know, what pests do you want to control, if it's aphids, for example. Then do some research for your region, what beneficial insects control the pests in your part of the world, be it hoverflies or ladybugs, whatever the case may be. Then find out three things they want. Number one is food. Those are the early blooming nectar plants or the nectar plants. A lot of times these will be native species, so really, really think about that. The second thing you need is water. As long as it can be a pond, it can be a bucket, it can be something as long as it's obviously not chemically treated or chlorinated. And the third thing is they need a place to live over the winter. That can be a wood pile. It can be ornamental grasses that aren't cut back. So learn to know the insects that are your friends in your part of the world. Give them a place to live, and they'll go to work for you. So when you do your planting with your roses, think about that concept as well.
Wow. Well, Paul, we've got another caller on the line.
Okay.
Sarah, you're live on Rose Chat. Good evening.
Hi. Good evening. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Doing great. Do you have a question for our guest, Paul Zimmerman?
I do. Paul, it kind of goes back a little bit to the climbing roses you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. I am very new to roses, and last year I purchased a Don Juan climbing rose, and I put in the trellis and was excited to watch it grow, and I had really good luck with it. And I had read one of your tips that talked about training the canes to kind of go at the 45 so that not all the growth was at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, when I worry about when I try to get the canes to go in that direction, sometimes do you see them squishing down, and is that bad?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. When you try to bend them a little bit, they almost feel like they squish or fold a little bit. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, I mean, you want to try to avoid that as much as you can. I mean, the roses are pretty resilient. What I have found is for example, if you have a cane that you say, okay, I want to now train it back across the trellis, and it won't go to that 45-degree angle, you could almost bend it in stages. What I will sometimes do is take the cane and bend it to, like, you know, maybe 70 degrees, tie it in, let it sit there for a week, and then the next week bend it a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. They seem to respond to that type of training in the sense that you can bend them a little bit at a time, and they sort of get accustomed to where they are, then they'll give a little more, give a little more, give a little more. You know, if you bend it and it folds in half and you get a pinch, I would almost straighten it back out again, let it recover, and then continue to try to work it again.
Oh, that's good information. Okay. Easy does it.
Yeah,
that's great.
Exactly. Yeah. Easy does it. It's what I always say with plants or any roses in general. You know, do what the rose will allow you to do, and trust your gardener's instincts. If you feel like you're bending it too much, it's about to go, stop. And then go ahead and tie it in, let it sit for a bit, and come back and work it a little bit later.
That's awesome. Okay, great.
Sounds great. Well, Sarah, thanks so much for calling in. If you'll stay on the line, we'll get your information. We'd love to send you a Rose Chat coffee mug.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. Stay
on
the
line.
All right, have a good one.
You just got to love Paul. He just always just knows just what to say to make it just sound so easy, and it is easy.
It is. Well, yeah, it is. I mean, that's what I was told. It's just gardening, folks. You know, it's not rocket science. It's just gardening.
You just have that way. I love it. I love it. Paul, before we let you go, let's talk just a little bit about the Rose Trials. Curator of the Small Rose Trials, I know you spend a lot of time talking to groups and writing about the results, but could you tell us how this information from the trials is benefiting the home gardener?
Yeah, the information from the trials is benefiting the home gardener in the sense that, you know, I mean, the thing that I'm proudest about the Biltmore Rose Trials, and I heard your interview with Lucas last week, and I'd advise anybody to go back and hear it because he's an integral part of this thing, is that we have created a trial that I feel truly speaks to the home gardener. You know, as Lucas mentioned, you know, we don't deadhead the roses every week. You know, they're a sustainable trial. The products we're using, you know, whether you use our products or not, is irrelevant. We're not doing a weekly intense feeding or a weekly intense spraying. So I think what it's doing for the home gardener is showing you that, A, you can grow roses this way in a successful environment. And the Biltmore has a lot of pressure. There's over 1 million visitors a year to that garden. But it's also, hopefully, that as you follow the trials and see what's winning and what's doing well, you'll begin to realize and learn what varieties do well in your gardening and bring them into yourself. And so I just feel like with these kind of trials, we're just saying, you know what, you can grow these roses with no more work than anything else in your garden.
Super. That's just perfect. Hey, we have another chat room participant that wants to know a little bit about propagation of cuttings. I know you have a video on your YouTube channel about that, but can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, propagation of cuttings is a great way to save an old rose. I will caveat it by saying that you have to understand that a lot of modern roses, for example, Knockout is a classic example, are protected by patents. And a lot of course, the David Austin roses are as well, so don't propagate those. The reason why is because the breeders are paid royalties per plant sold, and that's what pays for these breeding programs. You know, the breeding programs that rose breeders do cost a great deal of money, and it's just the same thing as royalties paid for authors or royalties paid for musicians. However, that being said, if you want to propagate a rose that you want to save, maybe it's something that your grandma planted or something along those lines, the best time to do that is in spring right after it blooms. Let it go ahead and bloom. When the bloom starts to fall apart, take a piece of cutting. The simplest way that I always tell people to do is get yourself a 1 gallon, you know, black pot that you, you know, nursery pot that you get from anywhere. Go ahead and put a soil in there, like a sandy soil mix that drains extremely well. That's incredibly important. You want to take a piece of rose that's about 8 inches high, keep the top two sets of leaves, the bottom two sets of leaves, go ahead and pull those off, nick the bottom of the plant with a knife, just take a sharp knife or your second turns and just kind of like score it like at a 45-degree angle, dip it in some sort of rooting hormone, root tone or whatever the case that you can get, and go ahead and stick them down into the soil, bury about halfway so only those top two sets of leaves are showing. Then I always tell people, get yourself one of those 1-liter soda bottles. cut the bottom off, slip it on top, and there's your mini greenhouse. And the key to do is with this is put it in a shady place that still gets bright light and keep it, keep the area humid. Because until the plant actually sets roots, it's basically pulling its moisture in through the leaves. And that's the key to propagating by cuttings that you have to understand. So, in other words, what you want to be doing is misting it, you know, take the bottle off, take a spritzer bottle and kind of spritz a little bit, put the bottle back on top, keep the humidity up, and then generally within 2 to 3 weeks it'll set some roots. You can give it a gentle tug. If you get resistance, you have roots. At that point, it's now a plant, and now you water it, treat it like a plant, and cut back on the misting.
So 2 to 3 weeks we should be seeing roots.
Well, you won't see roots, you'll feel roots. You'll get a gentle tuft. I mean, by that, but, you know, in terms of the time it takes to actually see roots coming up the bottom of the pond, that could be like 2 to 3 months. But just sort of give it like a gentle tug. If you get resistance, you probably have some roots coming. But the main thing I always tell people is, you know, keep the humidity up and, you know, take about twice as many cuttings as you expect to produce. If you get a 50% take, you're doing extremely well.
And one more question to that, about how long before you're going to pot those up separately?
That's actually a great question. Yeah, generally, I always tell people give it about 2 to 3 months, and then at that point, you know, you've got good resistance. Maybe you're seeing some roots coming out of the bottom of the plant. Go ahead and just, you know, gently slip the cutting. You can put like 6 to 7 cuttings in one one-gallon pot. Slip it out, and you'll sort of separate it very gently, and then go ahead and pop those up. I'd keep them in a shady spot for at least another couple of weeks, and, you know, after you potted them, like any plant, they've undergone transplant shock. But that's generally the best way to propagate roses or any kind of other plant. The other thing to remember is that, you know, some roses propagate easily, and some roses, no matter what kind of conditions you have, are almost impossible to propagate. And so if you have repeated failures, it's not necessarily you. It's just that rose just does not want to be propagated.
Thanks. That's great advice. Very good advice.
Yeah. I have to share with y'all something from our Twitter stream. Brad Warren, who is our friend on Twitter and on Facebook, just tweeted, mm-hmm. I grow roses for the heart, and so I don't have to smell my neighbors. I love that.
Might be time for new neighbors, Brad.
Yeah.
Brad, real. He is keeping it real.
That's a great quote.
Keeping it real. Oh, we do need a good laugh, we do. Well, Paul, it's been great to chat with you tonight. Thanks for all the great rose advice.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. Always great to be with you guys.
Guys, be sure to check out Paul's book, Everyday Roses. It's available at bookstores nationwide and also online at paulzimmermanroses.com. Well, we're at the end of another show, friends. Our time is coming to an end, but we'll be back next week with another awesome guest. We hope you'll join us. And until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.